Time for some basketball talk. And to do that, we welcome in John Corrales of Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast. How are you today, John?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing well, too. Thank you. We have us an NBA champion, those Denver Nuggets. I like the way you described it on social media last night, a combination of star power and guys willing to do the dirty work.
Yeah, it's just a nice group, a nice mix of guys that when Jokic and Murray got it going like they do, then it's kind of hard to beat that team. And that's always been the key for them. It's been keeping Jokic and Murray healthy together, getting Michael Porter Jr. healthy and contributing, and having those other guys, having a good mix of those other guys, Aaron Gordon, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Bruce Brown, just an amazing job from all those guys. A really good mix. Role players, Brown, Pope, Caldwell-Pope, who, you know, do those little things. A very unselfish star. Murray being just, you know, reaching that star level. It's really, really impressive.
So what can teams like, say the Celtics, learn from the way the Nuggets did things?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I looked at was, that, you know, Boston was so heavily reliant on the three-point shooting. And that didn't play out as the most important element for the Denver Nuggets. For Denver, it was about defense. They held Miami under 100 points for four out of the five games, and they lost the one game that they didn't. And Boston only did it twice. And so the defense-first mentality, and you don't think of Denver as a defense-first team, but that's what really won them game five, and that was just a great job of containing things that Boston couldn't contain during the course of their series with Miami. Duncan Robinson was 8 for 8 on cuts to the basket against Boston. He was 2 of 3 against Miami. I think both of those came in game two. So that type of stuff, that focus on the defense, being able to score in other ways, themselves cutting and getting to the basket, that I think is the biggest takeaway for me when it comes to Boston, because Boston was so heavily focused on three-pointers that I think they got away from the things that make a team successful in the playoffs, which is basically find a way to score, any way to score, and then just stop the other team. And if you can focus on that defensively and just get your buckets however you need to get your buckets, you'll be fine.
We're talking with John Corrales here on Downtown. Charles Lee added to the coaching staff along with Sam Cassell. Joe Mazzulla's got some veteran experience around. You referred to them as Obi-Wan and Yoda.
Yes. For a couple of reasons. First of all, because of their level of experience and their ability to teach a young Luke Skywalker in Joe Mazzulla, who is young and maybe a little bit brash and a little bit, you know, wanting to do things his own way and not exactly always listening. But their level of experience, and also, I don't think they're going to be around forever. That's the other thing. They're both head coaches in waiting, I think. And maybe that's not entirely the case. It's not imminent for Sam Cassell because he's been an assistant for so long, but he's been a finalist before, and he'll continue to interview for those jobs. You just never know when his time will come. And the same thing for Charles Lee. He was a finalist, I think, in Toronto and Detroit. So it's possible that those guys are only here for a year or two, which is actually kind of fine because I think Boston is kind of working under a two-year window with Jaylen Brown under contract for this next season and then his extension the following season. That gives Boston 2 years before Jason Tatum's extension kicks in and they are paying two guys $100 million combined, which is a ridiculous number, but they have to figure out if that's going to be how they want to operate. So 2 years with Mazzulla getting all of this experience, all of this knowledge, all of this teaching is going to be really, really important. It's going to be a crash course for him. That year that he has under his belt with all of these other experience from Cassell and Lee, that's going to really kind of add a lot of new ideas and new thought processes to the room.
Is it overanalyzing things to think that this puts him on a short leash since you've got a couple head coaches in waiting right there on the bench?
I mean, it's not out of the question to suggest that. I do think that Boston is going to be really, really careful. I've been saying that they really have only They have one more opportunity to change head coaches. And if they do it, that better be it for a while, because if that's not going to work, and in 2 years you're doing this again, then you become the Timberwolves. And no one wants to be that. No one wants to be cycling through their fourth, fifth, sixth head coach in a matter of, you know, 8, 9, 10 years. That's not how good teams operate. Look at Miami, Spoelstra, been there forever. Michael Malone in Denver has been there forever. You kind of need that guy that's been there to keep that stability. I know that, like, Larry Bird would suggest the coach's voice kind of gets tuned out after a certain amount of time, but even if that's true, you need to maximize that amount of time. And so I do think that Mazzulla will be given time to kind of figure things out. And the only exception would be is if 2 months into this, by Christmas, if nothing is going right and the Celtics aren't showing any signs of pulling out of a season-long tailspin next year, if it becomes like blatantly obvious that there's just no other path forward, unless that presents itself, they're going to give him time to kind of figure it out with the new staff.
Now that we go to the off season, we've talked about this a little bit, but how does this new CBA, how is it likely to impact free agency?
You know, that's going to be the real question here, because I'm looking at a guy like Fred VanVleet, who it would make sense for him to opt out and give up the $23 million a year and try to get a bigger, longer term contract. But there, that second apron, that super tax line, is looming as essentially a sort of hard cap, where the only teams going over that are the teams that are smack in the middle of a championship window. Their team is expensive because it's winning them a championship or two, and they're not looking to make other moves. They're willing to risk going all in on their current roster because it's been a championship roster. So that's going to be only a couple of teams here and there. For free agents now, it's, are you willing to take the money you're looking for from the teams with cap space? And that would be Houston, San Antonio, like those teams. Because if you're not willing to do that, then you can't go out and assign and trade anymore. You can't say, this is a huge thing for players. Jaylen Brown, for example, can't say, I'll take the new deal and in 2 years sign and next season sign and trade me to, Atlanta. That can't happen because Boston will be harking tax line now. That's a new element. You can't do that. Teams receiving a sign and trade are hard capped at the lower line. So it kind of takes away a huge kind of pseudo free agency from these stars. So how it impacts where these guys go is going to be really, really interesting, because it changes so much of the landscape. I don't know. I really don't know what the net effect is going to be. We kind of have to go through it for a season or two to really get the full sense of how scared teams are and how all in teams are willing to go.
News about the Athletic today, staff closures or staff cuts and people looking for work. And this is, a story we hear a lot in the world of media, particularly sports media. And I saw you tweet about this earlier, that sports media is broken. Part of this, and you alluded to it, is that newspapers, media outlets, traditional media outlets didn't plan very well for technological changes and have made some mistakes and continue to make mistakes along the way.
Yeah, I think that, it starts way back in the beginning, the infancy of, the Boston Globe had Boston.com, and a lot of the stuff that they put out in the Globe would end up on Boston.com. And like, okay, yeah, I could just read that and not have to subscribe. And I don't think they saw the future of how that would be consumed. And I don't think a lot of people saw smartphones coming, where now everything's on a smartphone. I'm glued to mine, and social media. So those things happened before two major landscape shifting events happened: the smartphone and social media. And since then, it's just been an impossible task of getting a lot of toothpaste back into the tube.
Mm.
And frankly, these outlets come and go. And there are so many good writers. Like, compared to the NBA, they could put 10 more teams out there and fill those rosters with guys who are good enough to be NBA players. And this is kind of how it goes. But at some point, each particular team gets diluted to a level where, I like this team, but they've got this one guy, and I like that team, they've got that one guy, and it'd be so much better if you got it back down to 30 teams and you had 2-3 stars per team. And it's kind of like that ebb and flow with sports media. There are so many things that are at play. Now there are so many subscription services that people want to read me. I'm behind a paywall. You got to subscribe to Boston Sports Journal. You want to read Jay King, you got to go to The Athletic. You want to read Gary Washburn, you go to The Globe. And you got to pay for each one of those things. So in Boston, it's a little bit more sustainable that you have, hey, I can pick my guy. And there's so many readers out there that, hey, I have enough of a pie where, Boston Sports Journal can live and work and pay me and all of that stuff. But in so many other cities across the country, that's just not sustainable. You get two places with a subscription service, and you got to pick one. And the other one, if people are split between the two, then neither of them have really the financial means to be viable. It's such a long, long process, long story here, Rich, that it's a shame that it's gone this way. I'm glad that there are outlets out there that give talented people a place to put their stuff out there. But the bottom line is it's money. And if the money isn't there, these outlets aren't going to survive. There's got to be a certain amount of money. And, when it comes to The Athletic, I've had private conversations with people wondering how they were going to sustain what they were doing. We all kind of saw this writing on the wall because they were pumping so much money into something that it just didn't seem sustainable. And here we are. They sold off to the Times, and now the Times is making the hard decisions, and something else is going to come up 2 years from now, and people are going to get jobs, and people are going to lose their jobs. It's just a vicious, vicious cycle. And a select few people with money are going to cash in on it, and the rest of us are going to kind of be stuck. And the only thing I'm hoping for as a person in this industry is, if I'm lucky, I get to go out on my own terms. There's probably like 5 people who get to do that. So that's the hardest part about all of this.
Absolutely. Well, it's a good analysis of it. John, we thank you as always. See John's work at Boston Sports Journal. It's worth the cost of admission to get to it. And, of course, on the Locked On Celtics podcast. John, appreciate it, and we'll check in with you next week.
Okay. See you. Bye.